Welcome to the Drive Phase podcast number 3, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we hear from sports administrators, coaches, athletes, and many other stakeholders in the sporting industry. Today, we'll be examining their contribution to various aspects of sports. Live from Kingston, Jamaica, I'm your host, Dalton Myers. And this week, we'll be looking at sports psychology. And joining us for this discussion is Olivia Rose Esperance, certified clinical sports psychologist and director of O&R Sports Consultancy. So Olivia Rose Esperance has been practicing sports psychology in Jamaica for over 11 years. She has an MSc in Applied Psychology with Distinction, a BSc in Psychology and Spanish, also with honors, a diploma in education in adult learning and assessment, and is currently pursuing her PhD in sociology with a concentration in leisure and sports at the University of Leicester. Olivia, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Myers.
Great. So you have been involved in sports psychology for a while. Just give our listeners just a bit about sports psychology. You're muttering 11 years, over 11 years in sports psychology.
Yes, it's been a while. I wasn't even aware that we had passed a decade. But as we enter into the next decade, sports psychology in Jamaica and in the Caribbean is slowly growing. It is really the use of psychological principles and techniques to help athletes become the total athlete. And by the total athlete, we mean developing not just physically, but emotionally and mentally, and being able to transition in a smoother way through the different phases, not only in competition, but the different phases in life in general.
How relevant is sports psychology to the Caribbean? It's an emerging profession in the Caribbean, so to speak, not in the world because we're just catching up. But how important is it to us in the Caribbean?
Well, definitely. I mean, sports psychology is not new in other parts of the world. It started from the 1920s and then went through some periods of, you know, dormancy, and was picked up again back in 1964, and we are now here catching on to it. And even with the late catch on, as I'd put it, we still have a lot more work to do, because it's very important for athletes to be mentally and emotionally prepared, because they perform in a very anxiety-provoking environment. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of anxiety. It's a lot that they have to deal with, not just during competition, but before competition and even after competition, depending on the result, whether it is a win or a loss. So sports psychology is extremely relevant because we have to work with all types of sports personnel, be it the athlete, the coach, the parents, everybody who is involved, the marketers, the agents, you name it, because we work as a part of a team to ensure that the best results are obtained for the persons who work in sports.
You mentioned about the other support teams. How difficult has it been to be considered as a key member of athlete support staff? So there's a coach, there is the, sometimes there's the medical personnel. How difficult has it been, certainly from your standpoint?
Well, because of the context in which I practice, which is a Caribbean context, and our notion of what it means to see a psychologist generally, not even a sports psychologist, just generally, you know, the negative connotation or the stigma that is attached to seeing a psychologist right, still exists in the English-speaking Caribbean. So as a result of that, we always will have to navigate through these spaces to let people know that, listen, working with a sports psychologist doesn't necessarily mean that something is wrong with you. It simply means that you want to maximize your talents and your skills and your potential on the day when it matters the most. And there are other things and benefits from working with a sports psychologist other than you being considered crazy or unfit, which may or may not be the case, depending. But it's very difficult sometimes to navigate through those spaces because you have to work with people who will tell you that, listen, we didn't have a sports psychologist 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and athletes were doing very well. Right. So where are you going now? And why do we need you? We don't even have gear and equipment because there are other resources and other support that's also essential that you know may be wrestling for competing with, which shouldn't be the case, but that is the reality and one of the realities in the English-speaking Caribbean. So it is a lot. You have to navigate people welcoming you and staff, knowing that you are part of the team and that you're not here to assess them, even though that may have to happen at a later date, depending on the situation and the context. But, you know, and the gender dynamics as well. You know, sports is still predominantly one in which males have more power and autonomy. And being a female sports psychologist, it has its own challenges. You know, just working as a part of a team management unit, you know, you are the person that has to help to glue all the different professionals together. You know, be it the sports doctor, the sports nutritionist, the physiotherapist, you name it. And we all make up one team. But I have found that in the last 3 years, it has been a little bit different in terms of being persons in the sports world are more receptive of what it is that we offer as sports psychologists. So that partnership and teamwork has improved somewhat, and that has helped in the delivery of our programs.
Okay. You mentioned a number of things just now, working with athletes, etc. Let me just ask you one. Is it easier to work with teams versus individuals? For example, there are team sports. There's a football, the basketball, the rugby, etc. versus the swimming, to some extent, the tennis, because there are singles and doubles, and the track and field, of course. There are different dynamics, but is one easier than the other based on your experience?
I wouldn't say it's easier because even if I'm working with an athlete who competes in an individual-based sport, I still have to work with a team of people. So, but obviously the number of persons would be less versus if I was working in a team-based sport itself. Mm-hmm. You know, so from that perspective, then there are differences, but I wouldn't say it's easier because we still have to administer a custom-made program to suit the athlete based on their needs and to also understand the goals that the coach and the other support staff has for this person or for this particular team. It may take less time and effort working with an individual athlete in terms of building that relationship because it's usually just a one-on-one situation. Mm-hmm. But then when you're in a team, you have to work with on building several relationships simultaneously.
Okay.
And that may not always be the easiest way or easy initially. But once you do get over that, then I think, you know, the program itself takes the same amount of rigor, etc.
Mm. All right, let's just pull it back a bit more now to you. So you're the owner of Owner Sports Consultancy. Mm-hmm. It's a new and emerging consultancy company. Talk to us a little bit about that, and why did you decide to go into this kind of an era?
Okay, so Owner Sports Consultancy is a sports company that looks at research, and an aspect of it looks at sports research, to be specific, the sports psychological aspect of it, administering psychological skills training to teams and individuals. And there is also a physical component to it that is run by my business partner. So currently we offer a range of programs. Currently, now we're focusing on sports research and sports community-based research, that is. And I think it's very much linked to sports psychology and sports sociology and how best we can now use that information to better our sports policies and better serve the athletes that are in our care.
In that explanation, which is good, one of the things that I noticed that you've established a program called CAP. Explain to our listeners a bit more about CAP. What is that and how do you see that impacting communities?
The acronym for CAP is really coaches, athletes and parents. It's a combination of using these three groups to help them to become a little bit more knowledgeable of the importance of sports psychology, how to access that resource if it's needed, when it's needed, their own perceptions of what it means to work with a sports psychologist, mm-hmm. some myths that they have, some do's and don'ts of being a good parent of an athletic child, because then it's a completely different ball game there. Right. And just to sensitize persons in a larger scale of the relevance of sports psychology, and it is a partnership with the Sports Development Foundation and In Sports.
Sports Development Foundation in Jamaica. All right, so there's CAP, and there are so many different projects that you have been involved in, and you're talking a little bit about that. Now, draw us in about the first ever Applied Sports Psychology Conference of the Caribbean that I know is your brainchild, and it is something that you're passionate about. This was hosted in 2018. It's something that you want to continue going. Why a conference like that? What's the impact that you're trying to get from that? And how do you see tertiary institutions, governments, etc., benefiting from such a conference?
Okay, so the first Applied Sports Psychology Conference of the Caribbean is my brainchild. And I believe that it's very important for us to understand the relevance and become even more aware of sports psychology in the Caribbean. I thought that it was a critical time to have it launched, simply because sports is a unifying force, and we have to, if we are the psychologists practicing in the field, we want to make sure that, you know, we use the sport in the best way possible. And that was part of it, which is why this aspect of it was launched here in Jamaica. And the second one, as a matter of fact, as I'm speaking now, I have been in dialogue with the partners for the second Applied Sports Psychology Conference, which will be in Barbados in August. We are finalizing the date and the venue, because it's something that I believe should be widespread, especially around the Caribbean, for us right. to understand and utilize skills and techniques that are being used in other parts of the world. And because of the overall benefit of, you know, developing self athletes and this particular group of people who work in sports.
Awesome. So you've been involved in workshops, in conferences, etc. And you've spoken a little bit about research. And in the International Journal of Arts and Science, one of your articles, the article is called Where Should Training for Athletes Begin? I think this had a lot to do with your master's thesis, examining the efficacy of mental training with track and field athletes at the University of the West Indies Mona campus. In that, you discuss what is called cognitive behavior therapy. Talk to us a little bit about that. And is it still relevant to research work being done in sports psychology in the Caribbean?
Definitely. Cognitive behavior therapy is a technique that we use in psychology as it relates to changing mind and mindset and how you think about things that will impact your behavior. So it's a combination of tools that we use to help you to understand and change perspective if necessary so that you can get the desired behavior. But that's just one of the techniques. So for that particular research, what I had done was looked at the effectiveness of pre and post test application of a sports psychological intervention, which was run for over about a 6-week period.
Okay.
And the findings suggested that, you know, from what I can remember, because this was a researcher a while now, that self-efficacy, which is a belief in one's ability to achieve something, had been lowered at the end of the research, because what happened was that you can believe that you can do something, and until you are tested, you may not realize that, oh boy, it wasn't as easy as I thought it was. So I remember on that dimension, self-efficacy had lowered, but it does not mean, or it didn't indicate that, oh, well, boy, the intervention didn't work. It probably mean that goals needed to have been adjusted. So goal setting had increased. We looked at progressive relaxation, and there were other skills that were used to test anxiety and arousal. And we found that towards the end, anxiety and their ability to control and regulate this was lowered. But that's what I can remember from the research itself. But it's important that we continue more research. And I mean, I've done other research about confidence and substitution in sports, and when players are substituted all into the game. But I have not yet conducted the other one about when they are
taken out of the game.
And my biggest research now is on support for student athletes, and what types of support are needed for them at the tertiary level, and how can these support help them in transitioning from amateur to elite athletes.
You mentioned about support for student athletes. You have been the sports psychology at the University of the West Indies Mona campus. But importantly, what I want to find out from you, how is that engagement with student athletes? How is that different from, say, professional athletes versus athletes at the secondary school level? So you have the secondary level, you have the university student athletes, and you have the professional athletes. What are some of the differences that you have picked up and things you would want our listeners to know about these three groups?
Let's take the first group. The secondary group of students, student athletes, are more passionate about the sport. They are more fired up. They are eager. They have a lot of dreams, a lot of aspirations. Some of them realistic, some of them not realistic. But the energy and the momentum and the fire that's within them to want to achieve this. Plus, they usually, whether they have the support of their family, they usually have a support system of a coach, teacher, parent, somebody that they believe can help them to achieve this goal. So their motivation towards wanting to achieve is sustained over a prolonged period of time during high school years.
Okay.
And then because of the culture here in Jamaica, where we have a very strong sports culture at the secondary level, be it Manning Cup, Da Costa Cup, Champs, you name it.
Run competitions.
Right. So because of that platform and that supportive competitive environment, you know, the motivation towards competing and that drive is very high. And it's somewhat cushioned by various types of support, whether it be from the alumni or the school and so on. And parents too. As they reach towards the tertiary level, they are now realizing that it's not just about competing for a prize. This is now somewhat of a salary because, and I say a salary because now you are getting a scholarship to compete or to participate in your sport. So unfortunately, this is where some of the motivation dwindles and needs to be sustained at a longer period by different support systems. Because now the environment is different. There is no more that special coach that you can go to and they are going to be your coach, your mother, your father, your sister, your uncle, your brother. Now you are in an environment where you are now competing with people who are already stars. So you have to make that adjustment. And the coach may not have the type of coaching that you will get is going to be different in good and bad ways. So the athlete has to adjust to those conditions. So you have to know that when you were in high school, you were a star. Now you are at the tertiary level, they are already made stars. You are not going to get the kind of
special treatment.
I didn't want to say that.
But no, well, it's true. And I know you're going to talk about the professionals, but this is also where the mental toughness becomes so crucial, and we can lose a lot of athletes because No, they're not the quote-unquote stars that are on TV every day that everybody's talking about and they're splashed across every social media network.
Definitely.
No, not a lot of people know about them, or they're in a group where everybody's a star. And so it becomes way more crucial. Is that something that you observe?
Definitely. And this is where, this is the genesis of the mental muscles. This is where working with a sports psychologist becomes very crucial, because now you have to not only navigate not being the star that you were in high school, you now have to navigate balancing schoolwork, because part of the salary / scholarship is going to be based on your academic performance. And when you go to lectures, nobody will know your name. And right. It's not, so that's a whole new world that you now have to adjust to. And then you may find complaints about the timing of training, because this is not going to be like a coach in country who going to come pick you up and or make arrangements for you to be picked up. You have to go to training on your own. And when you miss training, there are different consequences for that. So you have to adult up very quickly, right. And many times it is just university life on a whole for any adolescent going through the natural developmental stages. It can be difficult, right. But it's even doubled for a student athlete or for students who work and so on. So here the drive is not as, oh, I'm fired up to compete anymore. Here's, at this particular phase, I need to adjust to what's happening. And this is why different types of support system, you know, financial is one, you know, where sometimes they're provided with accommodation and a scholarship. And right. Emotional support become crucial. So the parents who used to check up on them, you need to still continue checking up on them, finding out how they're doing, how they're adjusting. And definitely, you may be far from their events, but if you can come out to support them, that means a whole lot to them. And, you know, again, navigating academic life, they may not necessarily pass the first semester. It doesn't mean that they're failures. They're just having some challenges adjusting to the mm-hmm. workload. And many of them overestimate their readiness for academic rigor at university life, because they were able to do it easy breezy cheesy when they were in high school. So they overestimate their ability and leave things until last minute, not realizing that their body is physically being exhausted at least more, and therefore they have to make different preparations to study and so on to complete and achieve their academic success. Now, by the time they transition into elite professional athletes. that's a different
in the sense of, is it that they don't want to have a sports psychologist? Is it that they know having more challenges, or they find it easier?
Well, by this time, it's mostly like cruising here. Mm-hmm. This is like, you know, you kind of have mastered or gone over most of the hurdles, but you still need that support, because success maintenance is crucial and critical. So, you know, yes, you are now, you know how to get over some things, you know how to manage and navigate certain spaces, but the role of a sports psychologist is still very important, because the lifespan of you being a professional athlete also is not forever, and you also will need to make certain preparations while cruising, while being able to navigate the life of a professional athlete, to make preparations post your athletic career and prepare for retirement, and just how you manage relationships when you have to go on tour for extended time, being away from family and friends, because these things also can play upon your psyche, and sometimes, even if you are a professional, it can impact your performance.
We're talking to Dr. Olivia Rose, sports psychologist. Remember to feel free to send feedback, comments, or questions to our email address, thedrivephase@gmail.com, or look us up on Twitter and Facebook. Our hashtag is TDP, or handle is the drive phase. Just a couple more questions for you, Olivia. Take us through some of the steps to become a sports psychologist.
Okay, so in order to become a sports psychologist, a sports psychologist, first of all, is a psychologist,
right,
who is trained and specializes in working with athletes and coaches and personnel in the sporting setting. So that simply means you need to be a psychologist first. He or she needs to be a psychologist, right? So you need a first degree in psychology and definitely up to a master's level in applied or clinical psychology, because there are different types of psychologists. You have a clinical sports psychologist, you have applied sports psychologist, and you have newer sports psychologist. So depending on your area of specialization that you would be interested in, this will determine what you do at the master's level. And you can stop at the master's level if that's what you want, and you would still be considered a sports psychologist, but would be an associate sports psychologist. And then when you need to do continuous training and development to be licensed to practice under JAMPSYCH, which is Jamaica Psychological Society. And then if you are so desirous, you can pursue the PhD or doctoral studies in sports psychology.
Which is where you are. Finally, just give us two or three advice that you'd give to any young aspiring psychologist or sports psychologist.
Okay. I'm going to choose the one to the aspiring sports psychologist. Because
the younger you.
The younger me.
What would you tell younger you coming up?
What I would tell the younger me is that, you know, I am happy that you're patient with the process. So you have to be patient with the process, because initially when I started, you know, people were not as receptive, and it takes a lot of hard work and dedication. Some of the same techniques that athletes use, you have to first use them on yourself to stick with it, because it's going to require a lot of mental work, a lot of navigation, a lot of emotional stability. So, you know, having a support system that believes in you is crucial as well. And just keep working. It will pay off. It's like training, at least training ground for the first 4 to 3 years. I hope it won't be so long for the upcoming persons, because there's no a platform for you to practice, because it would have been novel if you mention it now. You know, people are now aware of what this entails. I would also encourage them or advise them to do a personality. Well, you have to definitely check your personality type and know what is for you and what isn't, because when you work in sports, you have to work with a whole host of different personalities, and relationship building is critical. So if you have these skill set and this is what you like and this is what motivates you, and you're not afraid to mix and mingle with all types of people, all ranges, all types, I can't emphasize that anymore, then once you want to do, if this is what you like doing, sports, then this is definitely for you. And also, you will be traveling for long and extended periods, so this is part of the job. And if you need to be always at home, or you have your own issues with flying or whatever it is, then maybe you may need to revisit this profession.
Dr. Oliveros Esperance, thank you very much for being here. Thanks for joining us on this week's edition of The Drive Phase. Remember, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Tell a friend about the show so that they too can spread the word. And remember, feel free to send comments or questions to thedrivephase@gmail.com. And also follow us on Twitter @TheDriveFaze, and Facebook @TheDriveFaze. Or you can also use #TDP for all updates on The Drive Phase. Until next time, see you then.